right, welcome back to another week of Menace Podman. I'm Scott Keller along with Steve St. Pierre. The NBA just wrapped up with first round action last weekend, and we also began the conference semis last weekend as well. Today we get a few random topics. We're going to chat about MSU alum Matt Ishbia and the Phoenix Suns. Just a quick topic I want to talk about on them. Then, of course, we'll talk about our observations and opinions from the first round of the early games and the second round, and kind of sprinkle in our thoughts on, you know, stuff like MVP, maybe some Dylan Brooks junk. but I also just wanted to start with the first thing. I wanted to talk about Joakim Noah.
Name on your paper, first thing.
So, just to preface this, actually, yesterday I was thinking about how early on when we were doing the podcast, we were doing the pick stuff and the bonus cast and whatnot, and I was trying to highlight the charity and, you know, just get some good news and things like that. Didn't pan out too well because, frankly, we have like not a huge listenership yet. It's pretty low. But in the meantime, I thought with our first thing, maybe we'll start off with some good news every time instead of just something that's super popular out there in the basketball world. I was gonna say, I kind of maybe ripped this off of like John Krasinski a little bit when he did he did some good news and did those videos in the height of the pandemic and stuff, so shout out to him. I know everybody loves The Office, right? So
absolutely.
But yeah, so just yeah, in his spirit and the some good news stuff, I'll start the first thing off with some good stuff. So anyways, Joakim Noah, I know him. Obviously, you know him being Pistons fans, being prominent with the Bulls. He was kind of annoying. I didn't really like him. I don't know how many people really liked him, but he was actually a pretty solid player. I think I looked up, he averaged like double doubles almost through his career and whatnot. So he was pretty
I'll never
effective.
Forget that clip from Florida when he did the whole, "Oh my God, did you see that?"
Yes, I always forget too that he played for Florida and whatnot, but he was, like I said, pretty solid basketball player. I know he bounced around. He was in Memphis and like the Clippers and somewhere else. I can't remember for one season, like 40 games. There's another team I'm missing in there, but
you said Bulls, Knicks, right?
Oh, Knicks. That's who I missed. Yeah. I said out Memphis.
Yeah. Memphis and LA. That was at the very end.
Yeah, LA was like, I think he played like 5 games or something. But
yeah.
Anyways, I didn't realize how prominent he was back in Chicago. He's like got all these good, he's created this Noah's Ark Foundation and whatnot. And he started these tournaments and all these different initiatives and whatnot. But he just recently, he started this one city basketball league. And basically it's for men age 16 to 25 living in the west and south side of Chicago. And he basically created a league. So, and he did this with 28 violence prevention groups. And basically there's financial incentive for the players, off-court programs, family services provided, and even like paid job opportunities for the site managers, coaches, officials, and whatnot. So super cool. Just wanted to give him his due shout out and keep up the good work, Joakim Noah.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. And it's cool to see because you always hear all these stories about guys that, you know, can play but just don't have the opportunity. You know, now it's another opportunity for some of those, you know, talented players out there who aren't playing professionally or whatever. Here's another opportunity to play. So it's pretty cool. Puts other people in the spotlight. And like you said, it's all for a good cause.
Exactly. So then moving on, the next topic I wanted to brush up on was Matt Ishbia, owner of the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, a lot of changes have been happening since he took over. One of the big ones being, you know, getting KD, making that trade. I don't know how much he was involved in that.
It sounded like that was the first thing that he did when he took over. It sounded like he was very involved in that. So,
okay. I know I watched, just to get ready for this, actually, to talk about this real quick, I watched his like first press conference when he was first getting introduced. It's probably like 45 minutes long. It's probably the most homework I've ever done for anything on this show. he's an interesting guy. I know he's obviously, he got so what United Wholesale Mortgage is the CEO of, and that came down from his father. I know he works with the Suns. He brought his brother in to do things with him. So lots of family stuff. He, you know, kept calling his family up on stage, brought his kids up there and stuff like that. So, but he seems super hyper. <He's>, like, he seems like he's on sugar all the time, but maybe that's a good thing. But anyways, he was in the news recently just because of basically the, I know there's been the huge thing with Bally and the cable providers and whatnot. So basically the Suns are putting all of their games on public television. I can't remember the name of the station there. But basically, yeah, his whole idea was to just get this, get it out to as many people as possible. And he just thinks increasing, it goes out to what, so many million more viewers. There was a number in here. So it'd be available to 2.8 million households, Mercury games and Suns games, obviously, since he owns both. And I don't know, it just seems awesome. It feels like a great plan, a great model. The more people you get involved, the more people you get to watch the game. I assume you'll sell stuff, get increased interest and things like that. And I mean, the NFL is on regular television, so I made why everything else should be too. And we see how popular the NFL is. So.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is just the beginning as far as other teams following suit and doing something really similar. Because it's just the way, I think it's the direction that we're heading kind of as a society in terms of the whole TV setup. I think they're going to stop going away from cable so much and going into, other means of broadcasting the games and, making them more viewable to everybody. Not everybody has cable now. And so, they're just trying to make it more convenient for everybody as a whole. And it makes a lot of sense. I think it's a great idea. And I do think that a lot of other organizations will kind of follow suit.
Yeah, I know. Just, his main goal, everything is just to, be oriented for the community and the fans and be a voice for them. And I know he was talking about going back and forth between Detroit area here and they kept asking him, how are you going to do it? How are you going to manage the team from out there and stuff? And he's like, I think the funniest thing he said in there, he goes, in Michigan, he's like, it's cold in the winter. He's like, I will be down here a lot. So it's kind of funny, but
yeah, I love the honesty. And also, man, I just think it's a really good look for a new owner to come in fresh and say, hey, here's something that I can do that might not put more money in my pocket right away, but it's something that's going to, benefit our fans in the near future. And down the line, it's something that could wind up being, beneficial financially for him, but it's something that he just wants to, give something back to his fans and to the community right off the get-go. I think that's a great idea. It shows how smart he is and how in tune he is with the business side already. And yeah, it's a really good look, coming off a disgraced owner. We've talked about that whole situation with Robert Sarver, and for him to just come in and immediately make an impact, in terms of on the roster side, the personnel side, like you mentioned earlier with the KD trade, and now this, it's a really good look, and I think Suns fans have to be pretty excited.
Yeah, he actually mentioned Robert Sarver in his introductory press conference and actually thanked him for giving him the opportunity to purchase the Suns and working with him with that. So
yeah, there you go. Classic move.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised he mentioned his name in some ways. And then also through all this, we learned that obviously, the Cavs owner, Dan Gilbert, owns Quicken Loans, and apparently they have some pretty decent feud. I think it was back in 2021, United Wholesale Mortgage announced that they would no longer work with any broker or bank that also worked with Rocket Mortgage, or Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage, which is pretty crazy. That's pretty interesting. So it's like one or the other.
So far it's a decision that's worked out for them, because now UWM, they're number one now. They've surpassed Rocket Mortgage, and just you can see kind of it's a competitive business, and obviously they're competing against each other, and now they're going to be competing in the NBA too.
And then I guess one other interesting tidbit is Dan Gilbert was the only one who abstained from voting to approve the ownership. So, and now we know why.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a gutsy move there that, you know, obviously didn't have any impact on Ishbia taking over the Suns, but just went to show that, you know, there's going to be beef between those two sides. And, you know, here we go.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's only two random topics I had for today or for this week. I think I guess we can pop into the actual just talking about the playoffs, talking about general NBA, how everything's going. And I guess just to set the table a little bit, last week when we recorded, Miami, LA, New York, they hadn't completed their series. They were only up 3-1, but we just assumed all three of them would win, and they did. Boston was up 3-2 at that time. We assumed they'd take care of business. They did. Sacramento, Golden State, we had no idea what the hell was going to happen. And Golden State was up 3-2 at that point when we actually recorded, and they played game 6 that night. And then Denver, Phoenix, and Philly had all moved on. So that's kind of where we were last week. Going into this week, we made our predictions out there. That's kind of interesting because I feel like as we go through all this, I feel like three of the four predictions I made, I want to change my mind already. But just based on, that's how the crazy the NBA playoffs are. It's like your mind can change within one game. It's insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess to start us off, you want to run through the new injury report and we can go from there.
Yeah, for sure. There's not a whole lot here, but you know, we'll start with Joel Embiid, who was officially named the MVP of this season. He has the sprained right knee, and you and I both were pretty confident that with the time off after they, you know, finished off Atlanta and beat the Hawks, you know, we thought that with the time off, he'd be able to come back and play in game one. He actually wound up missing the first game of the Sixers series against Boston, but they play game two tonight, May 3rd, and it sounds like he is returning. So he's going to play. There was a lot of speculation that because Philly stole game one without Embiid in Boston, that they would rest Embiid for another game and not play him until the series shifts back to Philly. So, but he's going to give it a go tonight, it sounds like. And that's going to be interesting. You know, Boston, there was so much just talk about how they didn't play hard enough against the Hawks and they let them hang around. And, you know, a lot of people said they did the same thing in game one against Philly with no Embiid. But, you know, Harden went back to being, you know, vintage James Harden, you know, and they moved the ball around as a team, you know, a lot of guys stepped up and played really, really well. De'Anthony Melton, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris was solid. And, you know, we've talked about how Paul Reed, every single time Embiid's out, Reed steps in there and gives him something, you know, he's solid. So they've got a good team. They're well coached. Doc Rivers had their team ready to go, and like we said, they stole game one. So.
Fresh milk.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun series. I do think Boston's going to win tonight, even with Embiid back, but that, you know, is going to be easier said than done. You know, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I was going to say. Go ahead. I would go through the injuries first, and then I'll go in, I guess, a little bit further. Never mind.
Okay. Next one on my list is Jimmy Butler. Sprained right ankle, really bad sprain. He missed game two of the Heat series against the Knicks. Game two was last night, May 2nd. And he's day-to-day. You know, we'll see the series shifts now to Miami, so we'll see if he can come back here. But, man, it did not look like a good – I mean, no ankle sprain is good, but this particular one looked really, really bad. So,
yes, it did.
Looked very painful. And you could tell, you know, he stayed in the game because he wanted to try to tough it out, but he couldn't move at all. He just stood in the corner, and, you know, he was directing other guys to cut and move. And he was just kind of
– which was weird in itself because New York did not attack – him at all.
It was very weird, and it was weird seeing him stationary. He's not like that, you know.
He just stood in the corner there.
Nonetheless, they won that game, but then so Jimmy did miss game two, and New York took that one, so that series is tied. We'll get more into that here momentarily. Chris Paul has a new injury now. He has a left groin strain. He's day to day, but it sounds like he's going to miss multiple games. in Phoenix's series against the Denver Nuggets. So
I had seen something on Twitter today, and it was like an anniversary when Chris Paul had a groin or hamstring injury or something with the Clippers and played through it and had a great game. I can't remember what year it was, but
dude, it sucks, man. And it's just, you know, it's part of getting old. But Chris Paul, just every year, I mean, he always finds a way to get hurt during the playoffs. It sucks, man. He's such a great player, but, you know, his body just kind of betrays him, especially this time of year. So, you know, hopefully he can make it back before the end of the series, and hopefully they can come back. Denver's taken the first two games at home, so they're up 2-0. Phoenix needs to try to win both of these games here, games 3 and 4 in Phoenix, to tie the series. We'll see how it goes. Marcus Smart for the Celtics, he has a chest contusion. He is questionable for their game 2, which is tonight, May 3rd. And like we said, they're playing Philly.
He didn't even play Draymond Green. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think he would get less chest contusion, I heard, was Domas. So
exactly.
Yeah, and happy birthday, Domas, if you're listening.
There you go. Yeah, no chest stomping this time.
No.
Yet.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then the only other injury news I have, Julius Randle and Quentin Grimes. We mentioned both of them last week. Randle had the sprained left ankle. He returned for game 2. He missed game 1 of the series against Miami, but he did return last night, May 2nd, for game 2, and looked good. Looked really good.
He did. I actually didn't think he was coming back, but
yeah.
I don't know when they announced that. I don't know if that was kind of late when they announced he was coming
back.
It was
like after 8 o'clock last night. So it was pretty close to game time.
Yeah. He jacked up one of my bets. That's why I was curious.
Yeah. And then Quentin Grimes, he had the right shoulder contusion, and he was out the first round, but did return for game 1 of the second round. Game 1 was April 30th. And, he, although he returned, has not taken back his starting spot. So Josh Hart has been starting in his spot. And we kind of called that, you know, we kind of said it looked like only a matter of time before he was going to wind up in that starting unit, Josh Hart. So he's probably going to stay there, I'm guessing. He's looked really good. We've talked a lot about Hart. He's a great fit for the Knicks.
Yeah, and Hart and soul of the Knicks right now.
Yeah,
and all those press conferences, eating all different food and stuff. It's great.
And, you know, he's just a really good fit with that unit, with that lineup. So, I think he'll stick. I think Grimes will play more of a bench role moving forward. But we'll see what happens here. We'll see, you know, which team goes on a run here these next couple games, if any of them, you know, takes a lead in the series, or if we're just going to kind of trade off games. And, you know, you and I both, I think, said that we're picking that series to go the distance.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got to correct myself, because last week I ended up listening to last week's pod, and I said, I like New York in 6 because I want New York to win at home. And for some odd reason in my head at that point, Miami had home court advantage, and that's definitely not the case. So I changed it. Yes, we both said 7. Yeah.
Okay. So we both said New York in 7.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I initially said Miami, and then I changed my mind.
Yes.
Right there and then. So it counts.
Yep.
But yeah, it's going to be a great series. Hopefully these guys can all come back. Hopefully Jimmy comes back. You know, I don't think he'll be 100% in this series, but hopefully he gets somewhere close so that he can play and we can see these guys. Miami, of course, you know, Tyler Hero's out, Victor Oladipo's out, and they're already not a very deep team. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but should be fun to watch. And, you know, we'll see what happens here.
For sure. So, yeah, so all those injuries in mind, I guess, and then we kind of brushed over where they are as far as where the series stands as games. But I guess I'm just going to go back a little bit so we can, I don't know, just dive a little bit deeper into it through the rest of these. But I think we'll start with that Philadelphia one. You mentioned Joel Embiid with the MVP, and it was not even close. It was actually pretty much a landslide as far as first place votes were concerned. He had 73 of them. Jokic had 15. Giannis had 12. And I saw something. I didn't even realize it when I was looking at the final voting results, but somebody did not even put Jokic in the top five. There was one vote that didn't even put him in there. So that was,
I'd like to know who that was.
I would too, because they shouldn't have any voting rights any longer.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I mean, Denver was number one in the West. I mean, come on. I get that he's won the last 2 years, but Jesus Christ, man. Not even top five. That's inexcusable.
No, man, no.
So I
freaking moron.
Yeah, I like to know who it is too. But
again, we try not to be too negative on this podcast, but in this particular situation.
I can't help myself. I was shocked in that, but I was more shocked that Embiid got 73 of the first place votes. Like, I thought that was going to be neck and neck. Like, I thought we were going to be looking at, like, you know, 40, 32 or something like that. I mean, well-deserved and everything for either of them. I know there's some other names on here that actually got a few top five votes. The only other person that got a third place vote other than the top three was Jason Tatum. Who got his
Jason Tatum?
He got his third place vote. He was a solid fourth place with 89 of the fourth place votes.
I mean, the first quarter of the year, we talked about how good Boston came out of the gates, and you know, he was definitely in the mix early. But then they kind of slipped a little bit, and as a result, you know, his MVP chances kind of dwindled at that point.
Yep. But yeah, there were a few people, other names on it. Shay SGA. He had 6 fourth place votes and 28 fifth place votes. So he was basically fifth, which was solid for him.
Yeah. And well justified.
For sure. And then, then there's some stragglers in here. Donovan Mitchell, Domantas Sabonis actually had a bunch of fifth place votes. So he came seventh in the voting overall. And then Doncic, Curry, Butler, Fox, Brunson, and Morant. Those were just like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 votes, but showed up on there. Anyways, I thought it was cool. There was a whole thing about this is what the fifth consecutive international player to win MVP, obviously with Giannis winning 2, Jokic winning 2, now Embiid. Yeah. And then I went back and I was like, I feel like there's been whole bunch of them. And if you go to the early 2000s, if you consider this international, Tim Duncan was born in what, the Virgin Islands.
Virgin Islands.
Steve Nash, I thought he was just Canadian, but he was born in South Africa. I had no idea. And then
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I just read that today. Unless that's improper news. Maybe it's fake news. I don't know. But that's what I read. And then obviously Dirk Nowitzki was right after that. So there was, and some of those were Steve Nash, Tim Duncan, I think were twice in a row, right? I think they were back-to-back as well.
Yeah, I think so.
So
Nash,
I think that's
for sure.
Yeah, and I think Duncan was as well. So that's like 5 out of 6 years then. And just, I don't know. I know maybe I'm naive or something just because we follow basketball, and I follow basketball more than any other sport, but it just seems like internationally, it seems like it's growing faster than any of the kind of major sports. But that's probably just my opinion.
No, I think it's it's pretty valid, especially like worldwide.
Yeah.
But definitely on the upswing.
Yep.
In terms of popularity.
And then, so yeah, as far as Philadelphia is concerned, you mentioned James Harden having that awesome first game, just going off. And I guess basically the only thing I took from that first game of that series was I am a little alarmed for Boston, because they seemed to, that felt like their best offensive showing, like efficiency wise and everything, all playoffs and maybe all year. Like, they were amazing. I know turnovers wise, Boston trailed there like 14-8. They ended up giving up 14 more field goal attempts, but they had more free throws and things like that. But to have that great of an offensive game and not win is pretty crazy.
Yeah. So. The passing, the shooting, everything, you know, was high efficiency. But yeah, you got to play defense. You got to stop guys. And Philly just got way too comfortable way too quickly. And yeah, you let a team like that, even on the road, hang around. That's all it takes, man. And like we said, all those guys, whether it was Harden, Melton, Maxey, Harris, they all got hot. They all got real comfortable. And that's all they needed.
Yes. And then, Yeah, I don't think there's much more to say about that. Like you said, Embiid returning tonight as we record this for game two.
Yeah, how's he going to look? That's the big question.
Yeah, I think this is actually the only series that we disagreed on the winner of. I took Philly in six, and you liked Boston, I think, in seven.
So yeah.
All the other three, we came with the same winner out of them. Yep. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still leaning towards Philadelphia. I don't know why. There just seems to be something wrong with it.
Well, they won game one, so that helps. Yeah, I'm going to stick with my Boston in seven prediction. But yeah, it's going to be a lot tougher now. And with Embiid coming back, like we said, we'll see how he looks and we'll see how Boston adjusts to not only him, but to the rest of their team. Like we said, they got to D up a little tighter and make it a little less comfortable for these guys.
Yep. Moving on, looking at that, let's see. Let's just go straight to Miami, New York, because the winner of that will play the winner of the Philly-Boston series. Like we said, Miami took care of Milwaukee 4-1. New York took care of Cleveland 4-1. This series tied at one. And this is another one of those series that, we mentioned it before, where I think we both took New York in seven. I love New York. I think New York's great. I love Josh Hart. I love Brunson. But it was another one of those alarming games, the last game, I think it was, that, like, New York, I don't know. New York, Miami's playing without Jimmy Butler, and it was still looked like a struggle for New York to win that game. I think they actually still got lucky that they did win. And I think it's just at this point, it kind of feels like a battle of the defenses. And right now it feels like the Miami defense is actually better than the New York defense by a little bit. So if I could change my mind right now, I actually might change it to Miami, but obviously I can't. So I'm going to stick with New York, but.
And I'm not going to change my pick. I just don't think Miami can do this for the entire series. I just don't. I think they're running out of bodies. You know, even before Jimmy got hurt, we were saying, you know, it seems like they're falling apart. And, you know, we don't know that these guys can do this. We said we specifically on Butler, we didn't think that he'd be able to do, you know, replicate what he did in round one again in round two or anything, you know, too close to that. So I don't know, man. I just do not think Miami has the depth to be able to contain with New York. We'll see. I mean, the series is tied right now, so anything can happen, but yeah, I'm sticking with the Knicks, you know, we'll see how it plays out and we'll see who's healthy and who isn't, but, yeah. And then the injury to Butler doesn't help things. You know, even if he comes back, you know, he's not going to be anywhere near full strength and that hurts. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out
for sure. RJ Barrett has looked great though.
He has
acknowledge that he's had a good series.
And... Yeah, he, you know, to his credit, he's not the greatest player, especially during the regular season, but he picks his game up this time of year, and that's a good thing. He's got to get better as a whole. He's just got to get more consistent. But there's no lack of trying on his part, so good for him. And, you know, good for the Knicks. We'll see how he does, and we'll see how they do moving forward.
Yeah, I think if Miami sticks with what they did, I think it was game one, they really kind of bottled up Brunson and made him pass a lot and didn't let him drive and things like that. If they continue to do that, then it was funny because I remember us talking about last week, I think you mentioned something like who's going to be able to stop Brunson. I don't think anybody can stop him, and I think New York will win kind of thing. Yeah. And that very first game, it was like, whoa, they kind of stopped him a little
bit. They kind of did, so. but now I think New York has the ability to make adjustments for Miami's adjustment on Brunson. And, you know, they've got guys, you know, we've talked about how you and I both really like Emmanuel Quickley.
Yeah.
You know, if they really let him loose, you know, he creates a lot of other matchup, you know, problems for Miami.
Yeah, they didn't,
again.
They didn't seem to use him too much in game one. They used him a lot more in game two here.
Yeah. And you know, the Heat's lack of depth, it's going to catch up to him at some point, I just think. So, you know, we'll see, though. We'll see if New York can stay healthy, and we'll see if they can build, like you said, on their win in game two and utilize their team as a whole a little bit more. It's going to be fun to see how it plays out.
Yes. Yes, it will. I was waiting for that Miami-New York matchup, and it's awesome that it actually happened. Moving on, Denver, Phoenix in the West. Obviously, Denver took care of Minnesota 4-1. Phoenix took care of the Clippers 4-1. This one has, I gotta maybe eat crow a little bit here because I just Same. Don't like Denver, and I thought they were really boring. But I kept saying, you know, maybe I just don't know. They have the fundamentals. They're very good defensively. It's kind of funny because last night I was thinking about doing this podcast, and I was like, I don't like Denver, but I remember all through the year going, Denver's a funny team because you can't bet on them that well, because when one guy doesn't perform, another guy does, or another guy doesn't, they keep taking these turns, and it's like this full team effort type thing. And I'm like, that's actually a good thing. So you see Jamal Murray go crazy one night, and then game two, he couldn't hit the side of a barn, and Jokic has 39 points. So it's like there's this give and take, and Aaron Gordon's like really good in this series, and I think he's a big key too. And then you go to Phoenix, and they're getting everything they can. Durant's been, you know, fine. He's been putting up the numbers that you expect. What's his face?
Devin Booker.
Devin Booker's just on fire. He's been giving you probably more than you expected. Yep. But that's it. That's all they got there. And then Ayton.
And like we said, Chris Ayton. Paul got hurt.
Yep.
DeAndre Ayton has been a huge disappointment, especially in game one. They kept showing the clips of him just standing there watching Jokic tip the ball over and over again. Not a good look. And, you know, he has to get more active. And, you know, he's not going to match anything near what Jokic is doing, but he just has to try harder to compete more, you know, and do play his own game. And, you know, Shaq and Barkley keep saying, you know, Ayton needs to get like 20 and 10 or whatever. And they're not wrong. That's what he needs to do. And, you know, it's easier said than done, especially with such ball dominant players like Booker and Durant. But you've got to make Jokic work on the other end. You can't, you know, just let him do whatever he wants. He already has so much freedom offensively. But defensively, to let him kind of get away with sagging off and, you know, getting comfortable and not having to do as much on that end, that's not good when you're trying to beat the Nuggets in a series. So series is shifting to Phoenix.
That 2010 thing, not wrong, because you look at the other three teams that are in the West that are still left, and those guys are putting up over 20 and 10 almost every game. Like Looney's out playing 8-8. And,
yeah. No, that's a great point. Looney's doing – we'll get to –
That's yeah, I say that one for last, but
but Looney's doing all the things that Ayton can and should be doing, and that's correct. The thing is, like, you don't have to average 20 points, but man, get some rebounds, be active, move, make the defense work to guard you, and keep tabs on where you are on the court. And like I said, they kept showing the clip of him standing there watching. You cannot do that under any circumstance, especially in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah,
so he's biggest stage, you know.
he's such a frustrating point to me, because Phoenix had something good there, anything decent. Yes, they look unstoppable. Well, maybe not unstoppable, but with everybody else.
And he's got his contract. It was all documented. He wanted a bigger contract than what he actually got. He was frustrated about that. He also made comments last week. He was calling himself dominating. You got to back it up, dude. You know, we ripped on Dylan Brooks. You know, we did the whole crybaby thing, which, by the way, fantastic sound drop again.
It is, except it's at the bottom, and I think it's...
man, these guys have to, you know, they have to back up the talk. And again, this is the NBA playoffs. It's the biggest stage. Everybody's watching. You have nowhere to hide, you know? And this is it. Win or go home.
Yeah. And I guess a couple more things on Denver, though, just because I have to talk about it, because I kept dogging them. I mean, it's like everybody said, there was the...
they've been fantastic.
There's been the Durant thing. They asked him, you know, are you surprised or something about... After they lost the first game, right? And they said, are you surprised, like, Denver? And he's like, they're a number one seed in the West. I'm not surprised. They're really good. And I guess that's kind of... I should have thought of that stuff probably all year, but I don't know. They were just boring to me, and it just felt like they had that slip up in the air, and maybe it got to my head.
That was the big thing. We talked about that. They had that slip up, you know, and Michael Malone made those comments about, you know, we're getting too comfortable and it's not good.
I was afraid about the experience too.
Yeah, they haven't done anything. Yeah, they earned the number one seed, but they haven't done anything historically for anybody to really. Yeah, we had to kind of wait and see how they were going to look. And yeah, Phoenix has, you know, Phoenix is really top heavy, but they've got a lot of star power and it's hard to pick against them. So yeah, I think we were well within our rights to pick Phoenix to win this series, and it's not over yet.
Sure.
If Phoenix wins the next two, then the series is tied. And at that point, anything can happen. You know, we'll have to see how it plays out.
If you watch another, well, obviously you're going to watch another because we're going to watch a bunch of Denver Phoenix games. But every time they interview Michael Malone, she always goes, what do you have to do to, you know, get back in this game? Or what do you have to do to win this game? And he goes, we got to defend. And every time they see, he just says, we got to start defending. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But he's got the same message every time. And also, yeah. I thought it was another bit I thought was funny was Jamal Murray in his post game after the first game, because he had a great game. He kept saying stuff about, you know, people are disrespecting him or something, or yeah. I can't remember the exact words he used. And then he went out game two and just couldn't score at all. So I thought it was kind of funny.
But like Malone said, he still found ways to help their team win.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And that's all that matters. You know, at the end of the day, you just go out there, you do whatever you can do to help the team win. Even if you're struggling with your shot or whatever, then, you know, go out and make plays for teammates. Be a decoy. I mean, do whatever you got to do. Just play hard defensively, get a stop, you know, all those things, you know, all the cliches, yep. You know, that's what it's all about. And I want to give a shout out too, to Kelvin Booth. He's their, I don't remember what his title is now, but he's essentially their GM, their president. He's the guy calling the shots in terms of the roster build.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stuff that he did, you know, going out and getting Bruce Brown, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you know, these guys have really fit in well. Jeff Green, these have been good pickups, you know, and help take that team to the next level. You know, good, solid vets who know their roles and fit in well with Denver's established players, you know, Jokic and Murray and Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. And also it helps that these guys have all been healthy too. I don't want to jinx anything, but this is the first time since the bubble that the Nuggets have been at full strength here. And, you know, I think that shows too. So,
yeah. And they may be one of three or four teams that are really completely healthy. So,
yeah. And it's been fun to watch. And, you know, I'm hoping that Chris Paul can find a way to come back here. But, yeah, this is going to be a fun series.
Yeah. And then lastly, well, actually, before we get into this, this was all over Twitter a couple of days ago, but there was one of every seeds in the conference semifinals. I thought that was pretty cool. But then at the same time, you look at it and you're like, Lakers are 7, Golden State's a 6. Is that not really a 6-7 seed? It's just where it fell based on injuries and things. They're probably more like a 2 and a 3 or something like that. But
yeah, which actually makes it even better because, you know, now it's, you know, extra really good teams that we get to see for another round.
Yeah, no, I love it. But yeah, getting into the last one here, the Lakers and Golden State. I'm going to go back one first to the Sacramento Golden State series.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the only thoughts that I have, a few thoughts on that. One, obviously, Golden State experience. Steph Curry just took off, and that wasn't as good as a game as I thought it was going to be. And I don't know anybody else, but I thought really the dagger was that 4-point play by Klay at the end of the third, because Sacramento was back to within 6, I think it was. And it was like, okay, we're going to go in, you know, down 6 to the fourth quarter. And I was like, that's doable. And then all of a sudden it was 10, and I was like, I felt like it was over. And I think I even sent you a message around that time, and I was like, I think it's over.
And you could sense it. The crowd felt the same way, because they just, you know,
but
they got so quiet. And,
but yeah, so that was disappointing. Obviously a great season for them, but I think in numbers wise, it doesn't show as much. And I give all my love to Sabonis, and I love him. I think he's a great player, and especially fantasy wise and stuff, putting up, you know, numbers everywhere. But he just felt completely overwhelmed and very underwhelming the entire series. He even had 22 points in that last game seven, and I didn't even know he had 22. It felt like less than that. So he seemed very low impact, and Looney, Draymond Green just did a number on him.
I think that's just it, was that Sabonis was kind of by himself, whereas you look over at Golden State and just the combination of the thing, you know, Draymond was Draymond. You know, he always does all the little things. If you look at his box score, he always just has a little bit, you know, he's got his hands in the game, you know, all over the place. But Looney was just such a beast on the boards and offensively just as active as you could ask for, you know. Kerr says he's one of the best centers in the league. I mean, he's looked like it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's huge. It's in that combination. Yeah, I don't think Sacramento had anything to combat that with.
And you'd probably say the Looney signing, because that was just this last offseason, right? It may have been the biggest signing. Or the extension, excuse me. One of the biggest extensions that, you know, out of anything right now.
Under the radar. Yeah. Just a guy that, you know, they said, we're going to need him, you know, and they gave up on James Wiseman. They sent him to our Pistons. He's a big reason why. They said, you know, we're a championship team now. We can't afford to wait on guys. We got to maximize everyone that we have. And Weissman's our guy. Or I'm sorry, Looney's our guy. Looney. You know, he's the guy that's going to, you know, he already has helped us win championships. And, you know, we know how he plays and how he fits with the rest of our pieces. And, you know, that's what we're going to roll with. So, kind of a controversial move, but so far it's worked out really well. Now, having said that, they're down in the series against the Lakers. So,
yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned Draymond Green there, and I have to say again, I haven't listened to his podcast in a while. I listened to it the other day, and he was talking about losing respect for Sabonis because he didn't shake his hand after the series and whatnot.
Yeah.
I only saw it on Twitter, and this is the only reason I listened to his podcast, because I saw the clip on Twitter and I was like, maybe I'm taking this out of context. Maybe there's something more to this, right? And then I listened to the podcast and there was nothing else to it. He was literally saying he lost respect because he didn't shake his hand. And then you think, and you're like, well, you know why he lost respect for you? It's because you stomped on him. Now,
yeah, no kidding.
Now, granted, you know, there's a little bit of instigation and stuff with Sabonis, but still, you don't stomp on a guy. And then the only thing I have to say is I hate that comment. I disagree with it. I think it's a stupid comment. But like you said last week, Draymond Green is so outspoken. He talks a lot, and I respect him, though. A lot of the stuff he talks about, he's straight truth. Like, he's very good at the stuff he talks about.
He doesn't
about.
Sugarcoat anything.
No, and I completely respect that, and I respect him, and I think he's an amazing basketball player. But the whole respect thing, losing respect for him because of the handshake, I don't like that comment. But if that's the only thing I don't like, whatever, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of see his point a little bit, too. I think there is, you know, a right way and a wrong way to lose. Mm-hmm. But like you said, the dude stomped on his chest. I wouldn't be running over to shake anybody's hand after they kicked me in the stomach or whatever, in the chest.
Yeah. And maybe give him a loose handshake and don't even look him in the eyes or something. You know?
Yeah.
Just, I don't know.
Fist bump or something.
Yeah.
Head nod.
Yeah. No, like you said, I understand his point, but at the same time, I don't know if I would have either at that point.
And so, at the end of the day, who cares?
Exactly. Exactly.
Who cares? You know, they're either going to, you know, keep being opponents the rest of their careers, or maybe at some point they wind up as teammates. And if that ever happens, it'll be water under the bridge so quickly before you know it. They'll both be like, what handshake? Who cares? You know?
Exactly. Well, yeah. So. And then just to focus back on the Lakers now, like you mentioned, up 1-0. The Lakers look great. They look so good. And you talked about Denver making all those awesome additions. We talked about it last week, the week before, maybe even the week before. Yeah. Rob Pelinka, bang up job. He's probably done the greatest job out of anybody adding people to a roster. And now they're a legitimate championship contender, and they look so good. Vanderbilt was great the other day. Even with Steph Curry storing a lot of points, he still, when he was on him and he was defending him, he, you know, numbers looked great in his advantage defensively. I can't remember exactly what they were, but Steph was like two for 10 or something crazy when he was gardening them. Yeah, no, everything looks good. And then I guess the big thing today was Jordan Poole. Should he have taken that 3-point shot here at the end of game one? And I'm like, that, or was it a good shot or a bad shot? In my opinion, it's definitely not a bad shot. I mean, you're down three. Jordan Poole came through all game making threes. He always looks a little awkward when he shoots three anyways, to me, I think.
Looked like Darvin Ham had a little bit of impact on that play too.
Yeah, but I mean,
a lot of people were talking about that. I was laughing.
Yeah, I mean, Steph got doubled right there at the end. He wasn't going to get a shot away. That's what they wanted to do, get the ball out of his hands and put in somebody else. So I don't think it was a bad shot. I know it was, people were talking about probably making it more than what it was, but... and then Anthony Davis just amazing. I can't remember what those stats were. It was like over 20 boards, 30 points. It was some stat line that only like one dude has ever put up. I read it somewhere. Of course, I don't have it here in my notes, but I know there's a after game press conference. LeBron was talking about his number being up in the rafters when it's all said and done, things like that. And don't disagree. He's been amazing. And just imagine,
I got a
like
stat line.
Oh, thank you. No, I was filibustering until you found it.
30 points, 23 boards, 4 blocks, 5 assists, 11 of 19 from the field, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. Just as
you're blocking the crosswalk.
Nicely done. Just as clutch as it comes right there. And if he plays like that, it's going to be awfully tough for any team to knock off the Lakers.
I know. God, could you imagine Ayton playing against Looney or
Anthony Davis
right now?
Yeah, good luck with that.
I don't think it's going to happen anymore, but could you imagine? That'd be like a sweep. If it was Lakers, Golden State versus Phoenix,
honestly,
nothing,
man, you know, between him and LeBron, and then like we've been saying, all these other guys playing so well, D'Angelo Russell, Dennis Schroeder played outstanding off the bench.
Yes, he did.
Reeves has been solid this whole time, like you mentioned. Vanderbilt, they're just so good right now, the Lakers.
And they're even getting minutes from other people, like Gabriel was out there a little bit. They've got these stopgap people that can come in, and eat up some minutes. I think I read something earlier today that said, LeBron was telling Tristan Thompson, you know, keep the dust off the cobwebs. We might need you for some minutes or something.
Yeah, and he's not wrong. They signed him for a reason. So, he'll stay ready for sure. And we know Anthony Davis's injury history. So, I mean, I don't want to jinx anything there. But, I still somehow think Golden State's going to win this series. But, man, if there was one pick that I could change, it might be this one. I'm going to stick to it, though. I'm going to say Golden State still. But, yeah, they're going to have to make several adjustments here.
Yeah, I was going to say my only pick to change would be Phoenix in 6.
I don't think they're going to win the next four games. That's a good point, actually. That might be the first one I change, and this might be the second. But, I'm going to stick with Golden State here. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. If AD plays like this, it's going to be awfully tough for not only Golden State, but any team to beat the Lakers this year.
Nope.
That's all I got, my brother.
I think that's all.
Time to go, Maryland.
You got anything else you want to brush up on?
Nah, I think that's about it, man. Good show.
It was pretty much
caught up. All the playoff stuff. All the award stuff. Monty McNair, shout out. Sacramento Kings.
Exactly.
Executive of the year.
I wanted to look that up and see how many executive of the years and coach of the years were in the same year, because I feel like it would probably just be like some team that came from like far below and had an excellent year would always have coach of the year and executive of the year.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, the one that comes to mind for me is the Pistons. I think it was 2002. It was like Joe Dumars, executive of the year, Rick Carlisle, coach of the year, Corliss Williamson, I think sixth man of the year, I believe. Ben Wallace, maybe defensive player. Might have to look into that for the next show.
Yeah, no. But yeah, just came to mind. Anyways, you know what I forgot to mention is, okay, so we're on Twitter at Menace Podman. Go check it out. But I forgot to mention, if you're into sports betting, go check out Outlier.bet. They've got awesome stuff. People have been using them like crazy. Go check out the link on the top of our Twitter. We thank everybody for listening, supporting us. And we encourage some reviews. Get those 5-star reviews out there for us if you can. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
And Miss Parman.